Hello and welcome to Website UK, the audio-based internet information service for visually impaired people. This site is still very much under construction, but the bare bones of what it will become and what it can offer are already here. You can browse through the topics on this page and from there get information on the subject of your choice, in audio, in text, and via associated websites. In the talk section, you can join in the Website UK forum by emailing us or phoning your message through on the UK telephone number 01273 301 222. This is your site, so do get in touch and help shape Website UK for the future.
That's the audio introduction you can hear when you visit Website UK, an ambitious new website that's produced by the people who bring us BT Soundings that's heard on ACB Radio. Someone who can tell us all about that is Roland Myers from Website UK. Welcome to Main Menu, Roland, and first of all, for people who haven't heard of the site or visited it yet, what's Website UK?
Sure, well, I wouldn't be at all surprised if people haven't visited it yet, because it's brand spanking new. What it's supposed to be is a gateway to information. There are, here in the UK, a lot of organisations, a lot of really, really good organisations that I'm in a kind of privileged position to have a sort of overview, because my job is to talk to all of them and find out what they're all about. And it's easy for me to understand what's going on, though I don't pretend to understand it all. But if someone's blind or partially sighted and they need some help or support in whatever it is with their daily living, then the chances are, without trying to sound as though the garden is always green and the roses are blooming, that there is help out there. But where on earth do you go to get that help? And how do you find the kind of support you need in one's daily living? So the website, Website UK, is there so that people can very easily navigate their way to maybe not the perfect answer, but certainly it'll get them in the right neck of the woods, and they'll get talking to people, and they'll realise that they're not isolated, and that there is help and support out there, and through the wonders of the internet, they can at least make that first port of call. Thereafter, they may well turn to the telephone or whatever, but the website's the place they turn to first.
So would you describe this as a portal?
Yes, absolutely. Portal, a gateway, a kind of one, we'd like to think of a one-stop shop, although, of course, no one's selling anything. But, yeah, it's really because there are, I'm sure across the globe, there are so many organizations that have really switched onto one particular type of support for anyone who's visually impaired. And they really do it very well, which is terrific. But, of course, from the point of view of the person who's blind or partially sighted, it does leave an awful lot of places to possibly go to find the answers. I must say up front that this is something that we hope will grow. If someone visits the website now, they'll see it's fairly bare. I mean, we've got a fair amount up there, but nothing like what we hope it will become. So then you're introducing a lot more choice, and people can get to hear through audio, because that's what we trade in. We interview people, we talk to people. There are links to text information. There are links to relevant websites and to email addresses, so you can do all that. But the kind of core thing up there is a one-to-one, a chat, just like we're having, Jonathan, now. And we believe that although all these forms of contact are great, that the human voice is a fabulous way of really getting a message across. So they can click and listen, or press the enter key and listen, and hear a bit about what the service is, what's on offer, and then decide whether they want it or not, and whether they want to move on and have a browse through something else.
So what media formats are you supporting on the site?
Well, if you'd asked me that a year ago when we were hatching this, I probably would have given you one answer. If you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have given you another. I can tell you now the definitive answer. We're going for MPEG, layer 3, and the reason for that is that after a lot of consultation, we are told that is the most popular format. And of course it's playable on Windows Media Players. It's also because we give the facility to listen straight off the screen, or you can click to download as well. and MP3 players. I don't know how well they're going down elsewhere, but in the UK, they're just beginning to take off as a fabulous way of downloading audio straight off the internet, and you can carry it around with you and you know, access it when you feel like it.
Right, so you're both streaming the MP3s and making them available with a view to perhaps people collecting them on their Diamond Rios or whatever and listening to them on the bus as they head to work, for example.
Exactly, yeah. Streamed as, I mean, roughly speaking, I suppose, well, some of the, there are some very short clips up there at the moment. We'll see whether they stay or not, but they're little information clips which might last a minute and a half. The longer items will be about 8 minutes. But the idea was to put reasonably bite-sized chunks up there, not long interviews that might go into great depth. This is to give a kind of overview about what something is, what an organization offers, what a product is, whatever it is, and to allow people then to follow it up. Everyone's different. Everyone's got different needs. They've got different questions that they want to ask. Well, they can then follow up on a one-to-one basis. So reasonably short audio, but not streaming, not broadcasting, as ACB Radio does, just streaming short bursts of audio up to about 8 minutes maximum, I think.
How does the user interact with the website? Is this material searchable, or would they make their way through different categories to find what they want?
Bingo, yeah, different categories. This is actually, again, where consultation has come to our aid. I know that there are many different ways one can do this, but what we ended up doing was introducing a very simple front page on which there is the topic index. We started with a design which was more complicated, possibly more thorough, but on the other hand, the complexity of it can sort of put people off. Simply because, you know, because we're compiling it, we might view the stuff differently to someone who's using it. So there's a simple index, there are about 10 categories, which roughly are supposed to, if one ever can, break life up into different categories, from things like travel, hobbies and leisure, holidays, finance, consumer issues. There are profile items as well about blind and partially sighted people who've, and there's one guy up there who's here in the UK who's cut a CD, and it's great sort of middle of the road music that's been taking the radio stations by storm. A little interview with him and a bit of his music up there. So it's not all kind of, you know, serious daily living stuff, although the majority is. There's a bit of light-hearted stuff as well. And so various categories, you then just click on that category. That then takes you to, at the moment, up to three pages that could be. We will expand it, of course. We're only filling about one of those three pages at the moment. And then you just go down the topic. You get to a topic. Under that topic, there are various options. One is to play the audio straight. The second is to download that MPEG audio. The third is to perhaps bring up some relevant text material. The fourth is to email the source, not us, but to email the source of what we're talking about in that topic. And the fourth is to directly access their website.
Maintaining a site like this must be a bit of an undertaking, because fresh content is often the demise of websites that start being very good and then lose some momentum.
Yeah, absolutely true. That's right. And the tired websites sadly soon become apparent, although one does become very sympathetic with the workload that's involved. We're fortunate. I mentioned earlier that I'm in a fortunate position because I get to talk to a lot of the organizations in the UK that are providing help and support. Some of them are registered UK charities, some aren't. Some are in the commercial sector. They provide, you know, goods which they're selling, which have been specifically designed for anyone who's visually impaired, and so on. Basically, we'll talk to anybody. The reason I can do that is because one of my main jobs is as managing editor of the BT Soundings audio magazine, which is almost represents an audio partnership, if you like, between the major UK charities. But is there as a voice for all charities, large and small and minuscule. Anyone who's got something to say, we, through the power of the voice, through the interview technique, we chat to them, and they go onto a monthly tape. I say tape, that's the core service. It's many tens of thousands here BT Soundings information every month through the good old audio cassette, which continues to be a terribly popular medium because it's just so accessible. But of course, at the other end of the technological spectrum, thanks to ACB radio, people can hear the whole program, a slightly amended program, a special program for ACB radio. We don't just sort of put the cassette tape out. You get a special version. And that's globally broadcast thanks to ACB radio. So BT Soundings, coming back to your original point, is the reason that we are able to keep that information refreshed. So any new interesting items from BT Soundings, though Website UK isn't technically part of BT Soundings, nobody minds, and it's all part of a common aim to keep people informed. So we'll take those interviews, amend them slightly, and they go onto the site. And then the other danger is, of course, that you've got to make sure the stuff's up, that is already up there, isn't actually, suddenly it goes past its sell-by date. and you're putting out information that's not totally fresh. So we'll certainly be watching out for that very carefully.
Is there an issue with respect to endorsing or not endorsing a particular product or service? For instance, people may come across information about something on the site and therefore make an assumption that it's being endorsed by Website UK, and when they're dissatisfied with that service, bear some sort of grievance against the site.
Yeah, well, from our personal point of view, that's clearly something we would want to avoid, but I guess more importantly, we'd want to make sure that the information we were giving them never led them to feel dissatisfied with the service they were getting from anyone, that we'd interviewed on the site. We do, technically, we put up a disclaimer on the front page, which actually says that all this information is presented in good faith, and it makes the point that Website UK has no commercial interest with anybody that we feature at all. So we have there's no hidden agenda going on here. The serious point is to make sure that people are not misinformed in the first place. I mean, it's not really a matter of just watching our back. It's a matter of providing a valuable service. And I think the way we look at it is that let's say we're doing an interview about a product. I mean, the worry there can be that we interview somebody and they have a particular product, and they're going to say that this is the bee's knees. This is the business. This is the one you want. And we aren't in a position to necessarily contradict that. But why should we wish to contradict that just for the sake of it? If you see what I mean, there's no point in sort of being an aggressive journalist if there's nothing to be aggressive about. And in fact, I would best answer your question by saying that we've always been met with, I would say, a great deal of honesty. Before we do an interview, we say to somebody, look, we're going out to a broad audience. We will not endorse the product, but we will allow you, within reason, to say what you want about it. And to the best of my knowledge, we've never been taken for a ride. We've never been sort of misled. And that the claims that are made, if you like, on BT Soundings, and therefore the claims that are made on Website UK by a particular manufacturer, these are the claims that they publicly state, if you see what I mean. So it's there that they talk about a product, and they're just reinforcing that in audio. And that is the cut and thrust of the commercial world, and we will go with it. My main worry on this one, Jonathan, is that that we can only interview a certain number of people about anything. So let's say you want to talk about a scanner. There's a new scanner out. We can't actually put out 3 dozen interviews about scanners. All we can do is to come across the ones that we do and find a good reason for talking about them. Now, I don't know how familiar everyone is with the good old pound sterling, but we ran an interview year before last, when a scanner for the first time in the UK broke below the £1,000 mark. Now, that seemed like a story worth telling. Which then led us to say to the retailers, okay, what corners have you cut on it? You're in business, you're not a charity, so you can't be selling this unless certain concessions have got to be made. And we got a very honest answer back. And he said, yes, we have cut things out, and this is what we've cut out. So, in a very long-winded way, I hope I've answered your question, that it's I hope, reasonable investigative journalism that we do. No need for us to get too aggressive over it, but we do try to make sure that always there is a fair portrayal of a particular product. And, as we said up front, we have no commercial interest with anybody.
Well, sometimes the aggression is counterproductive, isn't it? It detracts from actually getting the information that people want to hear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It seems to go in phases. I don't know if you find that, but usually once the kind of, we find it in radio, you know, you sort of, the phase where everyone gets terribly aggressive and wild and they actually want to sort of get to the bottom of a particular story and they won't, like the old bulldog, you know, they think their teeth and they won't let go. And the listeners back at home thinking, why are they getting so wound up about this? But, yeah, absolutely, it is counterproductive. They've got to make, these companies have got to make money. If they weren't making money, they wouldn't be in business, they wouldn't be providing the service. But back to our role, it's simply to reflect things accurately and honestly. The nicest thing we were ever called, this is BT Soundings, is, and I'm happy to quote this one, because it really, I spent 17 years of my life in the BBC, and when somebody wrote to us and they described BT Soundings as, and I quote, the blind man's BBC, I felt more than a little proud of that. Not saying we're perfect, but we certainly strive for the same sort of independent ideals that that dear old auntie does.
I'd like to talk a bit more about BT Soundings in just a second, but can I just clarify whether there is an intention that this site will pay its way? Is there a revenue generation model here?
What are the plans for it? You've obviously, and quite rightly picked up on the fact that it is a pilot at the moment, and it's actually being supported by a UK charity here called ViSound. So it's actually all being done on a voluntary basis, and BT Soundings as a public service venture, donate the interviews that are going up there at the moment. Long term, yes, we are looking for commercial support for it, but we would be looking for the sort of support that was a partnership and not an injection of cash. Obviously we need money to keep it going, but the idea isn't for it to ever change the ideals of being independent and impartial and informative. So, obviously we want to keep it a professional service, and at the moment technically it isn't, because it's being run by professionals but in a voluntary capacity. So we'd quite like to firm that up, and certainly our plans for 2001 are to try and attract a financing partner for the project.
Let's talk about BT Soundings then, which is, as you rightly say, something that ACB Radio is and archives on demand. It seems to me that the talking newspaper industry, for want of a better term, is pretty full on in the United Kingdom. There seems to be a lot of it about.
Yes, it's a fabulous, I was going to say, growing concern. One or two local talking newspapers sadly do sort of fall by the way, but then someone else rushes in to cover that particular area. It's led nationally by, and I have to say I'm not involved with these organizations, but I get to talk to them. And in fact, the Talking Newspaper Association of the UK, TANORC, as it's affectionately known here, is a national organization that has been a terrific support to BT Soundings. They copy thousands of our tapes every month. It's free service, and they not only, they do that apart from, I think, turning over, and one's got to be jolly careful quoting statistics, but I have a feeling they turn over 2 million tapes a year. Those tapes being audio versions of the sorts of magazines that you can pick up, in the local newsagent. So they've got a fabulous selection, over 200 different magazines, gardening, chess, rugby, religion, I mean, you name it, they do it. And that's the national service. They're also the umbrella body for 200, and he's searching here for the right figure, but it's 200 to 300 local talking newspapers. I say local, it could be regional, by which I mean they may well put one, two, maybe three, the bigger ones, local papers, which cover a town, part of a city, or a larger rural area, onto tape. And they do this week in, week out. The reach that they have, I think, is thought to be in the region of 230,000 listeners every week. These are the local ones, collectively. And it was started in Wales, in fact, in Aberystwyth, 27-odd years ago, and it's just grown and grown. So it's sort of being attacked from both ends in the UK. The local talking newspapers, which are each looking after their own patch, and then the national organisation that's looking after the national publications, and, of course, the national newspaper, like the London Times is put on tape by Tannock. But Tannock also is very much moving with the times, because they've got a whole load of electronic services. They put text on CDs, they've got an email bulletin board service, and they've moved into other areas where you can go into your local library or to a local society for the blind, and you can pick up, you just go onto a computer and you can just pick up all these publications and read them. They're very broad. They deal with a cassette and they go right through to up to speed technology. So yes, talking newspapers, I can say this because I'm not, as I say, I'm not part of them. Fabulous, organization, and the local ones doing a terrific job, and long may they continue to do so.
Am I right in saying that there are those talking newspapers that read material from other publications, and then others that are kind of blindness specific, almost like a by the blind for the blind type thing?
As I understand it, the core service that is exactly, it was the first one you mentioned, which is they get hold of a copy. I mean, for example, we're in Brighton on the south coast in Sussex, in the south coast of England, and we've got our local paper is read onto tape by the Brighton and Hove talking newspaper, Brighton and Hove, two towns, neighbouring towns on the south coast, and that the newspaper's called the Brighton Evening Argus, and so they read every week an abridged version of the Evening Argus onto tape. On top of that, and away from that, some of them also produce their own local talking magazine. And in both areas, they will have blind and partially sighted people represented in the team that puts it together. That will vary. Each local talking newspaper is autonomous, so it decides what it wants to do and how it's going to do it. Some will use the services of, more directly involved blind and partially sighted people, some less. That's just the way it goes. But they tend to have advisory panels as well, who are directly advising on the content. But, there are many examples I've come across where blind and partially sighted people are actually twiddling the knobs, the controls, or they are, reading, or they are certainly editing what goes on and what stays out.
And so what's the mission, if you like, the purpose of BT Soundings, and how did it come to be?
Well, its mission, he says, quoting from the BBC's charter, is to inform, educate and entertain, which it's in our blood. We're all broadcasters by profession, working for or having worked for the BBC. So it's public service. No axe to grind, no hidden agenda, no one's tugging our strings, and that, these days, we believe gives it an inherent value to start with. Because, increasingly, and I don't want to sound too much like the person who said, in the good old days it wasn't like this, but I have to say, in the good old days, there was more scope for things just to be done for the sake of doing them, and not because there was necessarily an angle on it, someone was actually paying the bills. BT, British Telecommunications PLC, is paying our bills, but they have never, ever interfered with the editorial content of the program. And I think that speaks volumes for them. If you think our total financial resources, apart from the charitable input, which is enormous from elsewhere, but the only actual financial direct financial input comes from BT, and they have never asked us to do anything to the content of the program. They monitor it with interest, and we have regular meetings about what's in it with other charities around the UK. And I think that's, if I had to pay tribute to BT, I hope that that last sentence does it, because that's a rare thing these days. So it's public service. It started nearly 12 years ago. I wasn't actually involved at the beginning, but the voice, the presenter you hear, John Henty, he was there right at the start. And he went to BT and he said he'd had this idea, having spoken to the Talking Newspaper Association that I mentioned a little while ago. And they'd been chatting about the idea of setting up a kind of magazine sort of radio program for blind and partially sighted people. And I became involved, I guess, about 6-7 years ago, when a decision was made to kind of make it more, if you like, public service in the BBC-ish sort of sense of the word. In other words, it wasn't going to be quite so much chatting to people about their lives, more about providing information so more people could make decisions about their lives, if you see what I mean. So in the past, it was a great program. It was a very sort of very warm program, and I hope we haven't lost the warmth. But we did want to up the kind of input of information so people could A, feel less isolated, and B, have empowerment through knowledge of what's out there, and they can change their lives. And we've had some fabulous examples of that, and I've been really quite chuffed by it. Having been in broadcasting for some time, you get to hear nice stories. You know, people get in touch and they say, oh, I like this, and I did that, and I did that, and I did that, because of what I heard on the radio. But BT Soundings has had a much greater impact than that, because it appears that someone who's blind or partially sighted, and everyone's different and they've got their own story to tell, but they will hear something. They'll hear someone who is blind or partially sighted talking about something, or the benefits of something, or the fact that they have done a particular thing or used a particular product. And as we all do when we hear information, we relate that to our own lives. How can that help me? And it may be they're listening to something and they think, it can't help me at all, I'll just carry on listening till the next item. But there are cases where people have picked up information, and in one or two instances, they have been in touch with us, and it has literally changed their lives simply because they found out about something. That's all we do. We just tell people about things. It's nothing cleverer than that. But if they didn't know that before, they are hopefully that bit stronger once they've picked up that information. So BT Soundings, I hope, is a lot of things to a lot of people. We hope it's a friend to people. We have these resealable wallets that drop through the letterbox every month when the cassette version comes out. We hope that the growing number of people who are listening on ACB radio, and I went to a recent exhibition, and the number of people who have heard BT Soundings on ACB radio seems to be growing all the time. So we hope that people kind of, you know, it's there every month, and it's a regular friend, and hopefully an informed friend. But we aren't informed, we just make sure that we talk to the people who are.
From the technical point of view, given that this show focuses on technology, can you tell us a little bit about the production side and what equipment is involved in producing it, because the production values are superb?
No, thank you for saying so. Very simple, we used DAT and or Minidisc to capture the material. Occasionally we have a good old Dolby cassette, portable cassette machine standing by if needed. That information, the raw interviews, are then fed into a PC and edited. Normally a rough edit's done first, because unfortunately time is always the enemy. We've only got an hour, and we don't want to dwell on anything for too long. So that's really where my job comes in, that I have to make the difficult decisions often of what stays and what goes. So we'll then put the stuff into the computer and do a rough cut on it. Then it's scripted around the rough cut. Then John Henty comes in and records his bits, also put it into the computer. And then we actually put it together in modular form. In other words, we have John, the interview, or the feature, or whatever it is, and then John again with a back announcement to it, which is, you know, contact details. If you want to know more about this, please phone this phone number or email this address, whatever it is. And that module is then in the computer, we do several things with it. It goes towards Website UK, goes into another PC file, and goes to Website UK, where it is further pruned and amended before it goes up on the website. And then we use the computer to playlist these various modules. And if the timing's right and it all works out, we have ourselves 29 minutes and 58 seconds per side. But life's never that perfect, is it?
It certainly isn't.
So we then have to tweak it a bit more. But yeah, it's all done in computer. Has been for about 4 years now.
What software do you use to drive that?
Right, Fast Edit is the individual single stereo. We produce the whole thing in mono, but this software obviously is stereo capable. Is the editing package. The playlist editor also comes from the Fast Edit software group. Cool Edit Pro is the multi-track that we use when we need to use that. Although we do use Cakewalk Pro as well. And a package. I was going to say, I bet no one's heard of this, but you see, that's because I'm thinking UK. I bet many people have heard of this. Saw Plus. Anyone use Saw Plus? It came over from the States about 3 years ago. We got our hands on it. It's a multi-track software. Do you know this one, Jonathan?
No, I don't know of that one. I wonder if it's accessible, because with the exception of Cakewalk, there seems to be a real mission out there to find a good accessible multi-track editor.
Yeah. I think for single-track editing, I've heard that SoundForge is smiled upon, isn't it? It's fairly accessible.
Yeah, SoundForge is tremendously accessible, yeah.
That's good, is it?
Yeah. But not multi-track.
No, it isn't. I wouldn't have thought, I don't know, I wouldn't like to comment, but Saw Plus, it may well have moved on, because they then kind of raised the drawbridge on the supply to the UK, and we didn't get any more, so we've only got an old version of it. But the multi-tracks, yes, well, it's Cool Edit Pro or Cakewalk that we'll use. But frankly, the majority of stuff is done on Fast Edit. Because that's all we need, and I find that very user-friendly. But as a sighted person, you can get quite quick on it, but it's pretty mouse dependent, actually, so it might not be too accessible. I'd be interested to know your thoughts on that against SoundForge.
Yeah, I know of a lot of blind people who are using Fast Edit, and I have heard comments that some of the newer versions are a little less accessible than the older ones, but that the software vendors were receptive, so Fast Edit is certainly up there.
Yeah, no, that's right, because I emailed them a little while ago, because they brought out a 32-bit version at the beginning of 2000. Well, sorry, it was available in the UK at the beginning of 2000. And there were one or two changes with that. I don't think the accessibility may have changed recently, but it's good to hear that the manufacturers are receptive to it. That's good news.
So that's BT Soundings, and we're about to run the December edition on ACB Radio, so people should check out that and also look in the archives for back editions. Can we also talk about the URL for Website UK and also any other URLs that you think might be relevant to wind this up?
Yeah. I hope Website UK can be, you know, we talked about it being a kind of a gateway to other sources of information and other useful sites. Here in the UK, we are at www.websiteuk, the site spelled SIGHT, by the way, websiteuk altogether .org. From there are a lot of sites here. I don't know what it's like elsewhere, but in the UK, a lot of the major charities are really putting some effort into making their sites accessible. And they tend to split on the front page, do you want it with or without visuals? So they tend to sort of create two sites, whereas Website UK is for blind and partially sighted people. There are a couple of logos up there, some alt text, some alternative text for couple of boxes and things, but there's not a lot to get in the way, we hope, for most screen readers. And a lot of the charities, Tanork again, I recommend their website. The trouble is I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but you can get there via Website UK.
Well, that's fine. What I shall do is do some research and make sure that we put in those URLs at this point. I appreciate you coming on the program very much to have a chat to us, and keep up the great work with both BT Soundings and Website UK, and we'll certainly keep in touch.
Thanks very much. I'm sure we're short of time, but one thing I never spoke about is the forum on Website UK. You can email us and we'll get the messages up there. It is policed. It's not a kind of free-for-all live forum, but it'd be great for people to contribute to help get the thing off the ground. You could even phone the site, and then we put the audio from the phone message up there as well. So please go up on the site, play with it, and make it what you will, and let us know how we can improve it so it's what you want, not what we want to provide, but what you want to use.
That's Roland Myers, and as promised, here is that URL for the Talking Newspaper Association of the United Kingdom. It is www.tnauk.org.uk. That URL once again, www.tnauk.org.uk, and the Website UK site, the one that we've been talking about in this interview, is at www.websiteuk, that's websiguhtuk.org.